attractive.
I don't want to grow up, maybe if I did.
Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, here we go. It's another toy department. I am Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. And we've been watching TV a lot.
Yeah, too much TV. Too much TV.
Peak TV is real, man. The struggle is real. And it's funny, like, we talked about it at the end of the last pod. You know, oh, there's a lot of stuff coming back. And, you know, and I was like, yay, a lot of stuff's coming back. But, like, by the end of this week, I was like, oh, my God, man. I don't know how I'm gonna keep up with everything.
Yeah,
that's happening right now. Like, my DVR is like, really, dude? Like, that's pretty much it is just managing to record everything, never mind actually watch it all.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you, when I asked you, I think at some point this weekend, about the new Netflix show Love, I was like, so Love, you know, Judd Apatow, I'm usually a fan. It looks pretty good. How is it? I was secretly hoping you'd be like, nah, it's garbage. Don't waste your time.
Yeah, you
because,
don't need
it. Because, like, adding another show just seems insane at this point. But
I know.
This is the TV
That's where
world
we're at.
We live in.
Love is really good.
It
and
is.
We're mad that it's good.
Yeah.
You know? You're like, oh, another thing I need to invest in?
And it's the worst for me because I know once I watch an episode, like, if something doesn't totally suck, certainly once I get two episodes in, I'm a completist. I'm watching the whole thing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
it's dangerous. It's a really dangerous thing. You know, meanwhile, I've still got lists piling up of old TV shows I still haven't watched. You know, you're telling me The Americans is good. Like, eventually, I probably die under a pile of television.
Yeah, I hate to say this, but The Americans is almost invariably better than whatever it is you're watching now.
No, I know. I don't doubt that for a second, especially given some of what I'm watching. But, boy, it's, you know, like I said, I'm a completist. So once I start, I can't stop.
All right. I can relate to that, too, because I definitely have a few shows where I'm like, I'm still with this show. I call it like almost like the Entourage phenomenon.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, still watching. I'm here every week.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why.
The Entourage ones are the worst because it's three seasons of this is such a delight, and then all of a sudden you're like, wait a second, this is not really a delight anymore.
Yeah.
But what are you gonna? You're attached to those characters after three seasons. You know those dudes. You got to see what happens to them.
Yeah. Somehow they wrote me into three seasons and a movie.
I know.
You know what I mean.
I know.
Past that point, and
I
watched it all. I watched it all. I hate myself. So maybe, you know, maybe one of the things we could do in this show is separate some of the wheat from the chaff in terms of, all right, here are the shows that you're obsessed with, probably for a good reason, and here's maybe some stuff that, you know, maybe it's time to cut the cord.
Can we talk first about what actually is chaff? Does anyone know the answer to that?
Isn't it like the little, like, there's kind of that main stalk, right? And then there's like sort of the leafy stuff on the bottom end. Isn't like the leafy stuff, that's the chaff, right?
Yeah, okay, I guess.
Are you picturing the wheat in your head there?
I'm trying,
you know what I'm talking
to picture, trying to picture the wheat, but I'm thinking of wheat as like kind of like a tall thing.
Yeah, it's like a tall, thin thing that's kind of got like, I don't know. Now I'm like trying to mentally draw wheat for you.
Yeah, this is probably a road I should never have walked us down.
You're going to be Wikipedia-ing it while we talk anyway.
I already
All right.
did.
So what is the best... The things that really stood out the most for you this weekend over TV. Should we run? There's like, I don't know, 1,000 shows. But you know, you've got, you know, Vinyl.
Yeah.
You've got the Showtime offerings, Shameless and Billions, and Love. and the AMC offerings, Walking Dead's back, Better Call Saul. I don't know, there's probably some more. Togetherness and Girls came back.
Interestingly, and not on purpose, the only shows of the ones you mentioned that I am not on top of are the Showtime ones. I've not committed to Billions yet. I wanted to give it a little time to steep. I want to let it roll around the culture before I commit to that. And then what's the other Showtime one you just mentioned?
Shameless.
Shameless. Shameless is a show that my father has been trying to get me to watch since it premiered, and I just have never gotten into it for some reason.
I like Shameless. It's not one of those shows that feels essential.
Right.
But is highly watchable. You know what's really great on Showtime, and this is it's sort of toy department, sort of outside the toy department. They do a show called The Circus. That's a documentary following the campaign trail with some really great inside footage of the candidates. And it's short and it's very watchable. And it's, you know, it's kind of like Hard Knocks politics. You know what I mean? Huh. So you're literally talking about, you know, stuff that's in the news that week, seeing this kind of like behind the scenes view of it.
Fear and Loathing on the 2016 campaign trail.
Yeah. So if you can spare another 27 minutes.
hardly, my friend.
All right. But what was your favorite thing you saw this weekend?
Boy, that's a great question. And if we are restricting that to TV shows, I think I would have to say either Love, or I gotta say, I thought the Togetherness season premiere was fantastic.
Fantastic.
Well, maybe that's strong. Honestly, the shows that I really like, I didn't love the episodes this week. I'm enjoying Vinyl. I know you're not. We'll get to that. But I to say that was especially good would be misleading people. I loved Love. I did. I only watched the first two episodes, but I thought it was really good. It's got exactly the Judd Apatow feel I like. Togetherness, though, I just love what the Duplasses do. I don't know how else to put it. I love the style. I love the TV show feels like all of their indie movies feel, which is like this weird, awkward slice of life sort of thing, and I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a truth about it, and I don't want my skepticism to be anti-togetherness, because I really like Togetherness a lot. I just thought it was like another good episode of a good show. You know what I mean? I didn't think there was anything about that particular one.
Yeah, no, you might be right about that.
Stood out from last season.
I think that's right.
You know, this episode was a bit of a reset from sort of the cliffhangers of last season, and so you know you get some of that sort of first episode trying to find your way around and lay out the season exposition kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
Honestly, I can't debate any of what you just said. My thought process was really like I watched all these some of them, I guess, are season premieres. Some are like mid season reloads. Walking Dead, I didn't think was great. Girls was fine. You know, Vinyl was, I thought, incredibly enjoyable, although clearly has its problems. So that was somewhat process of elimination, getting me to Togetherness, gotcha. I think.
All right, well, I'll tell you the thing that jumped out for me. And that was this week's Better Call Saul.
That was great. You're right. I should have thought of that. I was thinking weekend TV, and I left out the Monday television. A quick note on that before you dive in is just I not that I ever didn't respect his work, but Bob Odenkirk's dramatic acting is awesome.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. And, you know, what was great about an episode like this, which kind of builds to this scene, and I, you know, it's first week out. I don't know if we need to spoil it. Where he's going to go off on. We'll just say he goes off on one of his kind of charming yarns,
yes,
where he's going to take somebody,
uh-huh,
and the story just basically builds into this epic con, where you know he's he's telling an incredibly tall tale, and it's a perfect chance for him to show off his comedic chops.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, a lot of that was his idea. A lot of that was scene was rewritten, sort of improv, based on his suggestion.
Yeah.
Of, you know, you got to name the thing that's happening here, and then it turned into, you know, dozens and dozens of names.
Yeah.
all of which are hilarious, and you know, it was just this great scene in the middle of this tension. You know what I mean? Like a very sort of tense situation, and this tremendous comedy scene comes back out of it. And just when you're right there in that moment and feeling good about this character and about this scene and about, I can't believe he just pulled that off.
Yeah.
The show finds this way to immediately bring you back into the tension.
Yeah.
And it just, you know, when I think about Breaking Bad and the way that that show, that, to me, the hallmark of that show was just that it continually turned that vice. And as it understood its characters, just got deeper and deeper and smarter and more well-written. And I feel like Better Call Saul may be on that similar path. And I would ask you, I think, you know, we all came into this just assuming that it's a spinoff, and we, you know, we hope it'll be entertaining. It'd be nice to visit with this character. Is it crazy to suggest that this could be as good as Breaking Bad by the time it winds up?
No, in a weird way, I think it's doing more interior stuff, right? So much of Breaking Bad was, it wasn't exactly an action show, although there was plenty of action, but even the non-action-y type of stuff, even this sort of emotional drama of Breaking Bad was very raw, very on the surface, very in your face all the time. And I think you sort of lose the ability to get too much of that stuff when you have a show where we kind of know what happens at the end of it, right? That, I mean, that's, so you don't have that what could possibly come down the road aspect, and so I think it's forced them to focus more on the interior life of these characters, specifically the Jimmy McGill slash soon-to-be Saul Goodman character, who, you know, just especially when he starts at the place we've now seen him start, just how he gets to his endpoint is incredibly interesting. And so seeing, and also seeing a guy who we think of as a comedian handle this part that has such depth, I think in many ways, we probably will never say this regularly, the zeitgeist probably will never agree to this, but I think it just, I don't know if sets the bar higher is the right phrase, but because of the content of the show, I think in many ways, it's really a better work of art in ways than Breaking Bad was, even if it's not the same phenomenon as a TV show.
I'm really impressed with how versatile it is, and you know, this year there's sort of been more elements of romance, and it handles all of
I
that
love
really
her,
deftly
by the way.
As well. Yeah,
I think she's phenomenal. You know, the appearances that Michael McKean makes, who again, silly. We think of that guy as a silly dude, and he is very serious in this television show, and he nails it. I mean, I think we have to say that Vince Gilligan is one of the best television show creators and runners ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, especially if he's following up essentially Cheers with Frasier, you know what I mean? Like that just doesn't get done very often, you know. So
No. And you get the feeling that I don't know why I decided to pick on Frasier just cuz you used that analogy, but this stuff feels timeless, what Gilligan's doing. I'm not sure Frasier's timeless.
That may be fair. What was the last time you watched a Frasier rerun, though?
I've seen it within the last couple of years. It's funny. I'm not hating. It's got its moments, but I'm not sure. It's also pretty specific.
I do think Cheers is kind of timeless.
Cheers,
right?
Is timeless. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Cheers still holds up, and you still see Cheers around. And look, I guess I really just meant it's very few people spin off a show and have it be its own thing in its own right.
I can't think of hardly any. I mean, what other shows? Because even the Frasier example, I mean, Frasier was successful and big, undoubtedly, but Not like this. What? Right? I mean,
well, Frasier won like 17 Emmys or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Not that that's the gold standard or anything, but
no, it was on a long time. Yeah.
It got really good ratings. It was a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess I would say Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose, but that's sort of a different thing.
Yeah, that probably. I don't want to lump those in, but it really is to have. I mean, part of it is Breaking Bad was. I mean, Cheers is also seminal, but Breaking Bad was such a big deal in a way that I'm not sure anything could be a big deal before, like, Twitter. You know, the Breaking Bad, the response from a certain portion of talkative television-consuming society, Breaking Bad was such a thing mm-hmm. that even though everything has always sounded good about Better Call Saul, I was certainly skeptical.
Well, and I think that there's an inherent skepticism in it. I think it's easy to sort of go, this is an AMC money play,
yeah,
essentially,
right?
And kind of go, it can't be that good. I think it might be that good. So if like if you're out, or if you just kind of decided you weren't gonna, you were done with this universe, go back. That's all I can say. Like it's worth it, and it's quickly becoming. The hour on TV that I'm most excited about, and that's saying a lot right now.
Right.
As we just said, there's a lot of TV. All right, so what else floated your boat?
I did really like Love. Really, really liked it. I first of all, I'm completely in the bag for Gillian Jacobs from Community, so. That's a start.
And I want to say she's revelation, but that's not really the right word because I think she's doing her thing. I think it's just maybe not enough people have been exposed to how great she is.
She's great. She's really, really funny. And you know, in some ways, this character is not that different from the Britta character on Community. It's obviously less of a caricature because that show is filled with caricatures. But, you know, she's this... sort of acerbic at times and odd and difficult person, but she's just so funny. And you know, in this, again, because Community is a very silly, silly show, she's very human. You know?
Yes. I mean, I think that's a big part of it because she's undeniably attractive,
sure,
in this very conventional way.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. But she uses that as sort of the base to play these people who are so clearly flawed and/or damaged that the combination of those two things like makes her very warm and very human and very real at the same time. You know?
And I don't know about you, but just on a personal note, I mean, I just couldn't be more attracted in general to incredibly difficult women. So this, like, her being difficult in a hilarious way is friggin', that's about as good as it gets for me. So watching...
I feel like we're men, and therefore all women are incredibly difficult. So.
Yeah, that's probably true.
we just can't really keep up with them.
Yeah, that's certainly true. But there's like difficult in that in the way that like we're dudes, so we have no idea what's going on. And then there's difficult like antagonistic and acerbic and you know she's
and
tough,
high all the time,
right?
And, yeah,
she's like. She's an odd duck and also strident about it. And like, watching her interact with the sort of passive dude who's the lead character on the male side, they're a hilarious pair, and they're fun to watch interact. And look, Judd Apatow, he's writing for me. I mean, I don't know how else to put it, because even the stuff... that, or much of the stuff that I think is widely frustrating to people about Judd Apatow, I actually enjoy.
Yeah, me too. And I think, you know, I think that the format of a series helps with some of the stuff that may make his movies tougher.
Like dragging it out an extra 30 minutes. That's just one extra episode now.
Length or whatever. Yeah, like these, you know, over in episode 4, some of that stuff I think works a little bit better. And you're right. I think there's just a humanity to him, and really like to me, if you liked Freaks and Geeks and you liked sort of his ability to tell outsiders and the chemistry between these characters and these situations that feel really real and true, like it's worth your time. And you know, it's Netflix. It's an easy binge. I had finished the show by now if I wasn't sort of watching it with friends and we were trying to stay somewhat in sync on the episodes that we were at.
Oh, look at you. What a good friend.
Yeah, you know, I try.
That was awesome how you invited me to be a part of that and involve me in that discussion. You know,
hey, since... episode 5, man. Catch up.
God, well, I'm too far behind now. I'm only through 2. So we don't want to spoil a show that just dropped on Netflix anyway, so... probably best not to go into too much detail, but I will just say it, if you are someone who has enjoyed the work of Judd Apatow in the past, this is definitely for you. And honestly, I think it might be, because of what you just said, it might be a little more broad than his normal stuff, because the TV show format, especially on Netflix, makes it less noticeable and obnoxious when things drag on a little bit, and makes it easier to get into characters that you know you're going to get to stay with for a little while, because I think he likes to sort of slow build his people. I don't know. I think it's very, very good. I was pleasantly surprised and also unpleasantly realized I'm now committed to another television show.
Yeah. And I'll throw one more out there in terms of, I think, what's been continually excellent. And we've talked about this before, so I won't belabor it too much. But People versus OJ is still killing it.
Yeah. I actually think this was the best episode, which is interesting because it was on its, you know, if you wrote the summary of each episode so far, this would be the least interesting summary, because it's like pre-trial hearings, and it's a lot of time spent in the courtroom.
Jury selection,
right. But, I mean, Courtney Vance as I'd almost called him Jackie Childs, as Johnny Cochran is awesome. Awesome. And the way they've built the tension between the lawyers on the Dream Team is killer. And, boy, honestly, the acting, the guy who plays Ito is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I mean, everything is just... The one thing that is standing out more and more to me on the downside is, although I don't think he's doing a bad acting job, physically, Cuba Gooding Jr. is just no OJ.
Yeah, see, all right, this is one of those things. And, you know, Simmons harps on this a lot.
You know what? I didn't worry about it too much. The first couple times I heard Bill Simmons say it, because I've heard the same things you have, I was like, whatever, get over it, it's acting. But the more I watch...
And that's continually his thing. He's obsessed with how short or tall people are.
Yeah, but the more I watch, and the thing that... the moment last night where I was like, there's a moment where he's sort of face-to-face with with Schwimmer.
And Schwimmer's really tall?
Schwimmer is by far the bigger and more intimidating presence. And it's just like, okay, that's a little weird.
This is not one of those things that bothers me at all. It's like you so rarely see a shot of him that is head to feet. You know what I mean? Like,
well, part of this is also I've been looking at old footage because the show brings that out of me.
Yeah.
I've been going and like just you know, all of the clickbait garbage that's like, click here to see the cast members compared to their actual, and look at pictures from the case, compare them to pictures from the Like, I click on all that.
Oh, you're at that level. You are in.
I'm so in, man. Because you know what? Like, this is a perfect zeitgeisty. I know that's the second time I said that word on the podcast, and I'm a little embarrassed. It's the first time one of these moments is one of my moments. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was old enough to really remember where I was and who I watched stuff with. But I was young enough to probably not have totally appreciated entirely what was happening, because in high school, you know.
There are all these phenomena, like this was phenomenon on the show, almost like, oh, it's an old friend, where it's like, you know, now that you're being reminded of this detail of the story, you're totally like, oh, Faye Resnick. Yeah, okay, I remember
right.
when this thing happened.
You yeah, totally. I mean? So, yeah, like, I totally Googled Faye Resnick last night and found out that she's on The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills.
Oh, I did not know that. Wow. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think Faye Resnick's a perfect example of how great the casting is in the show.
Oh, my
because
God.
That's, you know, Connie Britton, who's transcendent. She's always great.
Even her, like her affect. Her affect yeah. as Faye Resnick is just amazing.
It's a pretty small part, you know what
sure.
I mean?
Yeah.
But she nails it. When they need her, she nails it.
Yeah,
and I have a feeling that Selma Blair as Kris Jenner will probably be the same thing at some point.
Totally
you know
agree.
I mean?
And by the way, I would throw another guy in there, Nathan Lane.
Yeah.
In a not that big part as F. Lee Bailey. Just
yeah.
kills it. And you know, as far as
Evan Handler as Dershowitz,
well,
I
he's
think
great.
Is good too.
I always yeah. like Evan Handler. But as far as Travolta's Shapiro goes, it's very over the top, as you would expect from Travolta. And I don't know that Shapiro was really quite as buffoonish.
Oh,
as...
let's see that he plays. This plays right into my memory of Shapiro.
Does it?
Like,
okay.
I feel like Travolta. Yes, it's Travolta, and he's over the top. But I feel like this is a place where it's appropriate. You know
yeah.
what I mean? Where that's where it works.
Yeah. No, I think you're right about that. I'm not sure. And obviously there was some buffoonish stuff that happened in front of cameras from Bob Shapiro. I'm not sure I totally believe that he was as much of a boob behind the scenes as they're making him out to be, just because, I mean, yes, he was he liked to settle and whatnot, but the guy was a major celebrity lawyer for
sure.
And successfully for a while. I like, and they're kind of making him into a doofus, but it
yeah,
doesn't.
If you're
it
like LegalZoom or whoever that he's like doing commercials for now,
yeah.
like you're not happy about this.
It's not great, but it doesn't hurt. He actually founded LegalZoom, I think, which, again, is something that suggests he's probably not a total doof. But it does fit the show. And from a show narrative entertainment standpoint, I think Travolta's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. And anyway, it's a great show. You're probably going to read the Jeffrey Toobin book now, I have a feeling.
No.
If you haven't already, no.
I'm not going to. I predict, contrary to that, that in fact what will happen is when the show ends, I will quickly forget that my interest in the OJ trial was briefly rekindled.
You're like, oh, I did OJ.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about something that was that maybe a little bit less successful.
Uh-huh.
So for me, and you know, I think maybe there's a place that we can meet in the middle on vinyl in that, like, I don't think it was awful. Like, I'm still watching it, and I think that there are things about it that are not even worthwhile, but excellent. Like, visually, it's a beautiful show.
It's Scorsese. I mean, it's classic yeah. Scorsese visually.
There are some, you know, certainly some high point action scenes and things that make you go, oh,
uh-huh.
and, you know, there's a lot of showy.
Yes.
But it's also inherently flawed. And at times a tough watch, and as we predicted, talking about the show before it even aired, you know, the first one's way too long.
Way too long. The first
way
one was
too long.
The first one was insanely long. A long film. The first one was a long movie. And yes, it's sprawling and messy, which I guess shouldn't be. You know, part of me tries to figure out how much of this is Scorsese leaving his weird imprint on it and how much of it is what they're doing after he kind of, like, did his thing. Because I don't get the impression that he is sort of on top of this. I don't mean, like, he's lost it. I mean, I don't get the impression that he is the showrunner or anything.
Right. I think it's the guy that did Boardwalk Empire, which
right.
Scorsese
Terrence,
was awesome.
Terrence Winter?
Yeah, I think he... Terrence Winter.
Yes, right? Terrence That's Winter the is the
guys.
Name.
And also Mick Jagger.
Right.
Of the show.
So here's an interesting question to me. Because it involves Scorsese and Jagger, one of the criticisms that I have heard from other friends who've watched it and didn't love it is that it's too much. That, you know... between the cocaine, like, all the stuff that's happening is probably, like, a collection of stories that happened to 15 different guys over 10 years, all happening within 2 weeks. And that's where, like, I'm not sure I can buy that, because shouldn't Mick Jagger and Martin Scorsese arguably be the two foremost authorities on, like, drug use and craziness in the 1970s, particularly in the music scene?
Well, maybe, but to me, that's what I mean. Like, I feel like, one, the show makes a curious choice, I think, to, you know, tell this story from the point of view of a guy running a record company at this time. You know what I mean? That, like, to make it an industry story and a story about managing and controlling artists at this time, when supposedly, you know, rock and roll and creativity was surging, you know, to tell that story from the point of an executive as opposed to an artist, or even more from the A&R people, if you're going to go try to, you know, try to weave in the story of the industry.
Well, but isn't the idea sort of that Bobby Cannavale's character is fundamentally a music guy, even though he is the head of a label? He comes at it from the music side more than the business side.
Well, yes, sort of he does and sort of he doesn't. And I think, you know, honestly, calling him a fundamentally a music guy, at least in the point that I've seen in the show, would be wrong. He's fundamentally a drug guy.
Yes. Okay. But as much as they get into his origin story, right?
But I mean, this is part of the problem of the show. I feel like is that it should be a show that's supposed to be capturing what's great and powerful and captivating about rock and roll, particularly during this point where we're ascendant in the culture. And I feel like the show really whiffs on the what's great about music part. You know what I mean? Like it's much better at capturing the trappings of the lifestyle than it is about the feeling and the actual record and the what's driving and you know, whether these records are resonating with kids and any of that. I feel like takes a back seat to you know, coke and sex and booze and murder. And I just, that's the other thing, is like, do we really need murder in this stew? Like, I know it's Scorsese and there's got to be some violent beats that you want to hit, right, and whatever, but like, it's just all a bit much. And, you know, my mom's a doctor, and when she watches doctor shows, she has some specific criticisms.
Right.
And this could just be me, you know, being, you know, at least tangentially a part of the record business going, right, well, I mean, come on, it's not really like this. But I feel like it gets a lot of the important stuff wrong, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I can't totally disagree with that. I guess just to sort of come at it from the other direction, here's what I like about it. I do think it's wildly entertaining, although, you know, we can criticize if it's pointing at the right things or even being very truthful, you know, literally or emotionally. It is, in my eyes, a fun watch. I am enjoying myself. I also think that it has some of my favorite underrated actors and actresses, in fact, almost all of whom are pretty awesome. Bobby Cannavale, look, it's an outsized role for a guy who hasn't had that many outsized roles, and he is all in.
Yep.
And I love watching him. I love watching Juno Temple, and I think what you're about to say is that Olivia Wilde is awesome in this.
She is, and I think that. But what I was about to say is I think Ray Romano is as good as anybody.
And I have no love for Ray Romano, but this is he actually, since being Everybody Loves Raymond, has taken a variety of interesting acting roles, and I think it turns out he's a pretty good actor.
Yeah, who knew?
Certainly nobody who watched that television show.
Can you imagine if Jerry Seinfeld had just been like, you know what, I'm just going to do some drama, and then turned out to be really good at it?
Yeah.
Like, that is a similar type of transformation. Like, Ray Romano was just as wooden and
was
on the stand-up comedy doing television, you know, kind of actor on that show.
That's interesting, because I never watched Everybody loves Raymond. I mean, I saw maybe 5 minutes of it in my life.
I mean, I never watched Everybody Loves Raymond, but it was on, you know what I mean? So
you've seen it enough to know that he was just as wooden as Seinfeld. I wouldn't even have known that, but I will say, if Seinfeld ever acted in anything else and was any good, I would be shocked.
Right, you'd be stunned, right? Yeah. I feel like that this is a situation that's almost on that order. He's really good.
He's really very good. Yes.
Yeah. And look, like I said, I agree with all of that. I think the performances are great. Like I said, I think at times it's visually great. At times it's really fun. I also think it's a show that does not hesitate to drop an entire building on its main character to prove some point. You know what I mean?
It was a pretty ham-handed
access.
Yeah, and so there's some ham-handed symbolism and metaphors certainly.
We call Ryan Murphy out on many of his other television shows. You know what I mean? But because it's Winter and Scorsese, people are going to be gentle about that. But it's just as bad. They're laying it on just as thick.
They are, but it's a different thing that they're laying on thick. And to a degree, I think people who complain about the cheese of Ryan Murphy are just not Ryan Murphy fans. I might say the same thing about this as it regards Scorsese, whose name I don't even properly know how to say, as I'm sure you've noticed. But I think if you don't like cocaine and murder, maybe Martin Scorsese is not for you.
That's true. But I love Goodfellas. So
right. No, I get it.
Anti-cocaine and murder.
I get it. It's just cocaine and murder ideally fits within a broader storyline, and here it hasn't necessarily locked into that.
It's been shoved right up to the front.
Yeah. murder most cocaine filled.
Yeah. You know what's weird is I love or hate everything that Ryan Murphy's ever done. You know what I mean? I wouldn't say I'm a Ryan Murphy fan or not, because there are a couple of shows that he's made that I really, really enjoyed. A couple that I've hated.
Which
one? And one I started enjoying and turned into hating by the end of it. Nip Tuck.
Oh, yeah. I only ever saw one full episode of Nip Tuck, and it involved a teenage boy self-circumcising himself. And
yeah, that sounds about right.
I was pretty much out.
Sounds about right.
Although the B storyline in what I believe was that same episode involved the other doctor sleeping with – he had two twins came in to get plastic surgery – so they'd look different, but then looking different made them really depressed, and so he slept with them to make them feel better. Mm. So, yeah, it fits the idea of Ryan Murphy that I have in my head.
Yeah, it sure does. Sure does.
I watched a lot of Glee, and I enjoyed the first couple seasons of it, I think.
Yeah, I hated Glee.
But obviously, you don't like musical theater. I should have realized you wouldn't love Glee.
But you know what I did love was a show that really was kind of a predecessor to Glee called Popular.
Yeah.
That was a really excellent TV
show. I remember that.
I think it was the first thing he actually did.
Uh-huh.
I think really the shine off of Glee, I didn't spend a lot of time with American Horror Story.
Well,
everything I heard said it was peak Murphy.
The way you feel about musical theater is the way I feel about horror, except I'm terrified of it, in addition to being disgusted by it.
But I love this OJ thing. I'm all in on that.
It is phenomenal.
So, to the point of Nip Tuck and some other things, the one thing I think about this kind of period of TV that we're into now, where there's so much, there really is a Darwinian aspect to it of you only have so much time.
Yeah, from the consumer side, a Darwinian aspect.
Is there anything you found is just falling away for you at this point?
Yes.
Shows that you're leaving behind?
Yes, sleep. My sleep hours are falling away. No, there's nothing I'm leaving behind. I am less determined on a Sunday night to make sure I get to The Walking Dead than ever before.
Yeah, see, that's the one for me. It just doesn't feel very essential anymore, right?
This most recent episode, you know, we won't spoil, but it was just not interesting. It just wasn't. You know, and for the most part, I have felt that although it has become less compelling and less immediate and less necessary, I still was having a great time with it most weeks. But that's, I feel like the hit rate on that is starting to drop as well.
Yeah, and I, you know, it kind of got driven home for me because I did have this episode spoiled for me. I went on Twitter; it was dumb, and I didn't care.
Yeah,
I was like, yeah, all right, whatever.
Yeah, I mean,
I didn't care either way. I didn't care if they, you know, what happened.
Right, and honestly, at the end, when the thing that got spoiled for you, I'm guessing, happened. That was my feeling. Was like, all right, I guess. So I'm at a point now where the only thing that really moves the needle in the last few weeks, maybe even, you know, I did think the first two episodes of the season were great. When they had to deal, and I will spoil that, when they had to deal with the like giant pile up of zombies in the sort of ravine, and they were trying to reroute them, and like. It was exciting. I was on the edge of my seat. I thought they started this season really well. But I think it's been a struggle since then. And yep. I'm at the point where the only thing that really moves the needle is humans getting killed. Is characters we know getting killed.
It's kind of the last tricks they have left. And they just didn't, you know, they just didn't develop the characters strongly enough to survive this point where they've kind of done everything already in terms of you know, situations that they can put the characters in.
Right. I mean, Rick can only scream Carl so many times before we don't care
anymore
that
Carl.
he's yelling Carl.
Yeah. No, I just I think I'm done. I think I'm done with Walking Dead.
I wish I could quit you, Walking Dead.
Can't quit you. There's only so much time. And like I said, only so much space.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got all those PTIs piling up, you know.
Thank God. Yeah, I knocked that out by listening to the podcast on my way home from work.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a good run through the world of television. It's amazing, right, that we can do a whole show just on television, all the exciting things that are happening in television. It really does seem like the form of popular culture where all of the innovation and all of the new ideas and all of the new thinking and most of the excitement is happening, right?
You know, yes, although since you said all that in that way, I do have to mention, I saw the movie Anomalisa last night, and there are still people doing creative and bizarre and interesting things in film as well, because Charlie Kaufman remains insanely bizarre and a little off-putting, but I think fascinating.
All right, you know what? I might try to go catch that this weekend.
I mean, it is weird. And like much of his work, I wouldn't call it satisfying, but it's a thinker, and the way they do the animation is really cool, and it's certainly the most frank and honest non-live action film I think I've ever seen.
All right, are you making that homework for the week?
Yeah, let's make that homework. Watch Anomalisa. We'll try to talk about it next week. I will try to catch up to you and your cool kid friends on Love. And we'll see if we can meet in the middle somewhere.
I won't assign you anything else. Just that'll be your gig for the weekend.
Yeah, I still in the back of my mind have The Americans as like a long term project homework assignment right now. Like I hope to get to make some headway by the end of the semester.
The trailers for the new season look so good.
I know, because that's so the good. Other thing is like we had that conversation and other people have always told me to watch it, and then now I'm seeing the trailers everywhere and like I don't know what's going on, but it all seems very exciting. Yeah. I every time I sit down to watch another television show, I think is now the time I download and watch The Americans, and then I think, no, probably it isn't.
Well, maybe it should be, damn it. Maybe it should be. All right, thank you guys for listening. You can subscribe to this thing at iTunes and anywhere else. Is there anyone else you can subscribe to it? I know it's coming soon to the 93x.com website, which will be good.
Tis indeed, possibly this episode, and also, there's a Google Play thing that's happening, but they haven't fully launched yet, I don't think. So that's not yet available as far as I knew. But that should make it available for, like, Android people and whatnot. And, of course, the internet works as well.
And you can email us at toydepartmentpod.
Nailed it.
Gmail.com.
Nailed it. I mean, we don't check the email, but at least we've got to saying it correctly now.
Yes. If you can email us, it will make it there. We can't guarantee that we will actually read it, but it will make it there.
I mean, look, in my head, you know, theoretically, I intend to look. I would like to know if we've ever received any email, but I'm not totally sure because I just haven't gotten around to it.
All right. Well, ask us a question and we'll answer it, or tell us something we should watch and we'll pretend that we did.
I mean, I might even watch it because, as I said, I'm choosing television over sleep at this point.
All right. Well, with that, you know what? Maybe we should just not sleep until the next one, and then we can come in like Bobby
Kanye.
Cannavale in or Kanye. Yeah, we'll have our moment. It'd be great. All right, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening.
Bye bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The lights out. Butter's getting hard, the eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor, have yourself a tremendous evening.